Hi, and welcome to What a Mess, the only podcast that speaks about fashion industry issues. Today's guest is Aisha Barenblad, founder and CEO of Remake. Remake's turning fashion into a force for good, providing resources for many out there. Make sure to check out their latest campaign, hashtag no new clothes. Hi guys, this is Dami. I'm your host of What a Mess podcast. Today's guest is Aisha Barenblad. Welcome, Aisha.
Dami, thank you so very much for having me here. I'm excited about today's conversation. Hi, I am Aisha, the CEO and founder of Remake. We are here to make fashion a force for good through our education, advocacy, and transparency work. And I'm so excited, Dami, to be in conversation with you today.
Hi, Aisha. So welcome to What a Mess. For those who don't know you, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm excited to be here in conversation with you. So I'm Aisha. I love fashion very, very much. Ever since I was a little girl, I remember just being in love with everything that fashion can do for me in terms of my persona out in the world, signaling whether I'm in a good or bad mood. But I, unlike just having a relationship with my clothes around how it makes me look, I have also been a social justice warrior, sort of fighting for the rights and dignity of the people who make our clothes and thinking about the environmental impacts of fashion for the last 15 years. A little bit personally, I grew up in Karachi, Pakistan, and I now live in San Francisco, California. So I have this interesting vantage point of being in one of the producing nations that makes a lot of our clothes and now being in a Western market that consumes a lot of clothes. And so I really think about this work that I've done as a life calling. I've been on the inside of the industry, I've been on the policy side, and now I work more on the advocacy side. So that's me.
Exciting. So what made you found Remake?
Yeah, I founded Remake because I, having worked on the inside of the industry for more than a decade, realized that we were simply not making change fast enough. You know, I had worked on the inside of advising both luxury and high street brands on the business case for adopting better human rights practices, and you realize, you know, all those years of doing this work, that at some point the shareholders and the executives always win. And, you know, even working on the policy side, I realized, well, governments can be corrupt, you know.
Yeah, it's totally.
What we're needing is a ground for the people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think needs to change both for the consumers, but also for the brands in order to create that change, you know?
So I think, you know, in the last 30 years, we have only had voluntary efforts. So fashion brands telling us that they are going to take care of it. They're going to take care of the people and the planet. And frankly, what we need is all of us as citizens really asking the difficult questions and pushing back on brands. At the end of the day, this is about climate justice and living wages. And the only way we're going to get to those things is through the political will of getting good regulation. Look, it's a $2.6 trillion industry that's mostly deregulated. There's no way, even if we are the very best customers, that we're going to make this a sustainable industry. The only way to do this is for us to get the right policies in place, the right regulations.
Totally. I agree with you 100%. So growing up, when did you first see the gap between fashion and sustainability as well as fair labor?
So, you know, growing up in Karachi, there are a lot of garment factories there. Pakistan does a lot of our denim, so brings our jeans to life. Yeah. And I had family members that ran clothing factories. So for me, you know, I saw this as an opportunity to really be lifting up a generation of women out of poverty. You know, most of the people who make our clothes are women. But yet what I knew and I could see even in those early days was how much brands were just pushing on price and wanting to get things sooner, faster, cheaper. And what that meant is really just dehumanizing these women who are entering the factories with the hopes of a better life. But you can't do that if you're working a 10, 12 hour day and making poverty wages.
So what is your personal mission with Remake?
My personal mission
or personal wish, maybe to rephrase.
My personal wish is to remake the connections with the makers of our clothes, for us to understand that it's mostly young women of color in their early 20s who are bringing our clothes to life with a lot of hopes and dreams of their own. So first and foremost, Remake has always been that storytelling platform. You know, we do short form documentaries, investigative articles, really to get you to feel that empathy and connection to the human beings behind your clothes. But if I were to have a second wish, it's for us as everyday people to buy fewer, better things. And then the time and energy we save from buying less, we spend it on regulating this industry so that it's more fair to the people on the front lines of fashion's impacts, whether in terms of the labor issues, the human rights abuses, but also in terms of the environmental impacts.
So storytelling is the core of Remake's, you know, I guess company's vision, and helps the public to believe and take the action to move the industry forward. So do you have any stories to tell us that have been super impactful throughout this whole process of, you know, having the company and also, you know, that help you to continue with your mission?
Yeah, you know, I have had the privilege of sitting down, having meals, being in the homes of the makers of our clothes for many, many years. And pre-pandemic, one of the things that we used to do is run a contest in different fashion schools here in the United States and take fashion students with us to get to meet the women who are going to bring their fashion to life. And there are so many stories that stay with me, but, you know, right behind me, you can see that is one of the makers in Cambodia, Char Wong, and it was one of our very first Remake journeys that we took. And, you know, she had made this beautiful turquoise blouse that she has with on her own free time. And she sat and told the students, you know, people often just think of me as a worker, but I am a designer and a creator and a maker in my own right. And the fierceness and the dignity with which she was sharing her story, I think, really hit home for our, you know, soon to be graduating fashion design students. And so that I think is really the power of remaking those connections, because when the students were graduating from Parsons and from California College of the Arts, a lot of them talked about how meeting her really impacted their design and their collection that they were making. And so much of this is about going back to the communities that bring our fashion to life. You know, in the last year, we've been working remotely with a lot of the communities, understanding what's been happening to them. And it's been so difficult. I think it's been difficult for all of us, but particularly for the makers of our clothes, with canceled contracts, brands demanding discounts, delays in payment. It has meant that she has been hungry, not been able to afford two meals, you know, having to pull her children out of school. But the stories that I'm struck by over and over again is just the fierceness and resilience with which, whether it's, you know, young makers in Myanmar on the front lines fighting for their democracy, or it's, you know, garment makers right here in LA that are fighting for minimum wage, or makers in Bangladesh that are demanding for, you know, being paid what's legally owed to them. I'm just struck by the fierceness And that, I think, really galvanizes us as a remake community of citizens to say, if she is fighting so hard, then so shall we. We're just really galvanized by this connection.
I wanted to ask you as well, how did you build the community, you know, the community of those amazing people? Did you have any idea, concept, mission, vision, or was it super organic and kind of happened?
So, you know, the big dream, and I think for those of us that are stupid enough to found our own thing, it's you have to have a big audacious dream. But, you know, all the years of working on the inside, I kept saying, look, there's a seat absent at the table. And that's all of us. You know, it's like, what if there is a groundswell of citizens, of fashion lovers and IG addicts and people who love fashion but want to wear their values? That's our slogan at Remake, right? That we also care about the climate and we also care about people. What if we were there to hold this industry accountable? So that was the big vision. And, you know, in terms of online, it's very much been organic. You know, we don't pay for our followers. We don't take money from the fashion industry. We are a tiny nonprofit. So, you know, the fact that our pay up campaign went viral, or wonderful fashion podcasts like yours or magazines reach out to us, it's just because of the authenticity of the message. So it has been very organic, and we've been astonished at how much the message has resonated. One of the things that's our secret sauce is that outside of all of the press and the online engagement, we really believe that change comes at a local level. It really is about, you know, you talking to your friends, talking to your community. And that's really where our ambassadors come in. You know, when we started, we had a handful of people that were coming to all our events and kept saying they wanted to do more. And so we started this volunteer network of ambassadors who at this point are 800 strong. And these are people increasingly in the UK, you know, in 39 different states here in the United States. And they are in fashion schools and policy schools, and not just campuses, but inside fashion brands, and really here to disrupt the system and to ask the difficult questions. So one of the reasons I think we've really grown is with our local community organizers, you know, who are donating their birthdays and their holidays to like do Remake and fighting for this cause, and pre-pandemic having swap parties, and you know, we'll all take the pledge of no new clothes over the summer. So we've really built a community around this, and I think that's what sets us apart.
Yeah, totally. And you mentioned as well that you've been really authentic with your message. So I wanted to ask you, what would be your message to, you know, the new generation of creatives and fashion industry insiders who are in a position of actually making the change and shaping the future of the industry? Do you have any message to them?
If I could sit down and have a conversation, I'd have so much to say. But I'd say, you know, at the end of the day, it's become very trendy to talk about sustainability. But let's be honest, if we truly want a sustainable fashion industry, we have to put two things on the map: degrowth and living wages. If we're not going to talk about those two things, we're going to make no progress. Because if you're going to keep pumping out product out in the world, our earth can't sustain it. Our natural resources can't sustain it. We don't have the water for this kind of behavior. Even with all of the circularity and natural materials and everything that we do, at the end of the day, we have to be thinking of fashion not as a disposable good. And with automation coming, with this industry consolidating, with the humanitarian crisis that we've seen during COVID, I would really plea to all of the decision makers within fashion to not forget the some 70 million women, artisans and garment makers who bring our fashion to life. She deserves a life of dignity. And that only way to get there is through living wages.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree. My next question actually, you know, comes down to this very consumerist society where unethical and ultra fast fashion is still expanding. And what measures in your perspective can be taken to balance the equality versus quality?
You know, the ultra fast fashion trend is really troubling. As I was looking at, you know, pandemic profit numbers of Boohoo's, misguided Fashion Novas of the world, did wonderful. And so I think one of the things to debunk is, you know, people will often say, oh, you know, it's the end of fast fashion. It's the end of ultra fast fashion. Slow fashion is here to stay. And I'm a numbers driven person. That's just not true. You know, there is a small and mighty community that are embracing more sustainable, ethical, slower fashion. But the ultra fast fashion, the people doing the Shein hauls and buying the, you know, 1 pound boohoo bikinis, they're here. And there is a lot of them. And the only way for us as citizens to stop the madness is through smart regulation. And I think in COVID, mostly because of the unions and labor organizers fighting so hard for what's right here, but us as citizens pushing for reform, there are some really interesting legislations that are out there, you know, whether the Garment Worker Protection Act here in LA that would assure a minimum wage, at least for the women making the ultra fast fashion and the fashion here in California, or, you know, mandatory human rights due diligence coming out of Germany and other parts of Europe. So I'd say we need to be paying attention to our policymakers doing their job. Yeah, because the thing is that this type of ultra fast fashion has a big impact, on women, has a big impact on our planet, and we have to stop it.
Yeah, totally. I fully agree with you. And what would be the message, you know, to those people who go and buy those £1 or $1 boohoo, you know, clothing or accessories? Do you have a message for this sort of average Joe out there that doesn't really know much about sustainable fashion, but they are willing to learn?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the price reflects the exploitation. So just know that if it's costing less than your favorite cup of coffee, that there are human beings that were harmed in the process of making that product. There is just no way, whether in Leicester, UK or Los Angeles, California, that with that price point, you could make something that treats the people inside the factories with dignity.
Yeah, in COVID, I fully agree.
You know, we've seen the COVID outbreaks with this. But, you know, I think one of the things that we are very careful about is not pitting the people who have to go to Primark because they see their own wages shrinking to buy a few basic garments because you've seen wage cuts to somehow say that that makes you a bad person. You know, so much about our movement and within Remake is about remaking those connections without guilt, without making you feel terrible about your choices. And so if fast fashion is all that you can afford, you know, then go forth, but buy it, take care of it, wash your clothes, you know, in cold water or hand wash if you can, line dry. But I will tell you that it isn't the people who can't afford, you know, expensive clothes that are the ones that are fueling this ultra fast fashion madness. We know, I mean, the numbers when it comes to the boohoo's misguided, it's, you know, a lot of people who are buying bags and bags of clothes so you can get that one TikTok video, one Instagram photo, and then throw it away. And that's the problem, you know, because then those clothes, even in terms of end of life, is shipped off to Ghana and other places where we are hurting their, you know, soil and oceans and impacting landfills around the world. But also it's at the cost, at the very physical, mental, human cost of women. And I wonder if more people knew that, if that would stop. The other interesting thing is, you know, we have a lot of fast fashion addicts in our ambassador community who have quit the habit. And, you know, this is why over the summer we take a 3-month pledge of no new clothes. Why 90 days? Because it takes 90 days to break up with a bad habit. And so many people have told us, because what we do when we take this pledge is we unsubscribe from all the fast fashion ads. We're not looking at, you know, the ads online anymore. And people tell us, well, we calculate how much carbon we save, how much water we save, but also how much money we save. And our community talks about, you know, turning inwards as a community makes you so much happier, because it turns out all those hauls and hauls of clothes that fast fashion makes you believe is going to make you feel good. Well, the materials are cheap. They don't feel good on your body. The construction is poor, so it's going to fall apart. It's probably cluttering your house and your closet. Then you're going to throw it away. And that little bit of hit that you get by putting it on, it's very fleeting. So, you know, I would say join us, join our ambassador community and lean into a community that'll make you your best self so that you can wear your values and stand for something bigger than just cheap clothes.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was younger, I was actually in LA and I got this job. It was a job, you know, for a fashion startup. And my job would be basically to order like really big unit orders from Chinese manufacturers. And I could actually see in the Excel spreadsheet, you know, the original price point and the selling point. And when I looked at it, I was like, oh no, I will never shop in H&M and Zara and all these, you know, trendy shops for, you know, 20-year-old something girls, because I was really motivated just by the fact that I'm actually spending like $80 on something that's worth like 2 cents. So to me, that was a sign, that was like a big red flag that something's going on. And back then, nobody was really speaking about that. But thanks to that job, I was, you know, able to really see what was going on behind the scenes. And I think many people are also motivated by because you mentioned there are a lot of ignorant people out there who just buy fast fashion because they like it, right? And I think if we're able to tell them, hey, you're actually overspending your money because this garment is not worth that much money, and you're contributing as well to exploitation of those, you know, garment workers and to this horrible, you know, cycle of the fashion industry, and not contributing to anything positive whatsoever. It's not even good for your skin. So yeah, I think that's a very fair point, you know, and I'm glad that you have
it's
people.
It's not going to make you happy, you know, yeah, it's not going to make you know, Shein is very popular right now, and we have an assessment tool. Like we, as a part of our transparency work at Remake, rate brands, and Shein got a zero. Like they have nothing when it comes to looking at, you know, human rights and environmental practices. So for all those people, you know, out there with their Shein hauls sharing how wonderful it is that you can buy so much with so little money, we have to make it unfashionable to do that. You know, we have to make it from a cultural standpoint. You know, I look at like, it's like, how unfashionable is that? The product is poor quality. It's hurting people on the planet. It doesn't look that cute. Like, let's be honest, it doesn't feel nice, you know?
No. It feels like trash, but you know, sometimes it has a design that's kind of copied from like Prada or Gucci, and then your brain goes like, okay, I might look good in it, but then you're like, nah. So
when it arrives in all that plastic, exactly. I mean, this is where, you know, I hope COVID has taught us something, you know, where we've been sitting on our Zoom screens and it's like, well, how much do you really need? How much do you really need to buy? You know? To be presentable for your meetings or your classes. And I hope that this reset is something we carry back into the real world once we're vaccinated, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I wonder, what is your relationships with clothes? How often do you buy? Do you swap? Do you rent? Do you wear vintage? Do you buy secondhand, or you just buy less? Like, I just wonder what you do yourself.
You know, I sort of use a mix of all of those things. So I am an avid renter. I've been doing it for a very long time. And partly it's because, you know, I do a lot of speaking engagements. I'm also a mom, so my body has changed over the years. And so for me, rental is that perfect, you know, blend of, if I'm in New York and it's cold, well, I don't have to buy, you know, an expensive winter coat. I can rent it. Accessories is something that's wonderful for rental. So my go-to, even in the pandemic, when I got tired of, you know, wearing stretchy pants at the bottom and a few nice tops at the top, I renewed my rental subscription because it just gave me that sort of pop of color and that rush that some of us get with fashion. I feel good about it because it's nice quality garments. I'm not spending that much money on it. And then I can send it back.
Yeah,
but there are some things that are not really conducive to renting, you know, and that's where, so within Remake, we have a sustainable brand directory and we rate brands in terms of who are the rock star brands that are really out there thinking about these issues in a substantive way. And so I have some go-to places like Packed Apparel. I buy all my underwear there because you can't really rent underwear, you know. And then San Francisco is really, you know, that's just And I love Nozolo, one of our other rockstar brands. It's a Peruvian boot company. San Francisco is like made for walking. That's where I live now. And, you know, in the pandemic, it certainly kept me safe to have my like Nozolo boots and go for a walk. So, you know, shoes, underwear, I'll buy from sustainable brands. I'll rent as much as I can. And then I shop my sister's closet. I'm lucky that my sister lives nearby and that's wonderful way of sharing clothes is a way to, you know, get new clothes without the expense and without supporting these unsustainable fast fashion brands. So it's a mix, but I will tell you that, you know, I still do love fashion. And I think that's also different from our community, you know, even in the pandemic, even when I've had to wear a mask, I put on lipstick and I wear a face of makeup and it just makes me feel better, you know?
Yeah, why not? If you want to do it, why not? I mean, who cares, right? Yeah. It's for you, first of all. Yeah, and I wanted to ask for those who want to find those, you know, brand lists and resources, they can find them at remake.org, right?
Remake.world. So our website is remake.world. It's kind of a play on, you know, remaking the world one purchase at a time. And yes, you can find our short documentaries and stories, which is about building and remaking the connection with the makers of our clothes, our sustainable brand directory, so you can discover who are, you know, the true rock stars that you should be spending your hard-earned money with, and who are the serial offenders that you can really use your voice to ask the hard questions so that they can be more accountable.
Yeah, cool. And can you tell us about your new campaign, hashtag No New Clothes?
Yeah, so, you know, we're almost up upon the summer. I can't believe it was just May Day.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's crazy.
It's so crazy. But, you know, every year our community, and now increasingly it's people out in the world, join us to take part in our No New Clothes campaign. As I was saying earlier, you know, it's 90 days of buying nothing. And people define buying nothing in different ways. You know, some will still swap or share with friends. Some will buy vintage rental. Others will use the time to really declutter their closet and say, I'm just going to try and mix and match and see what are the pieces that I would want to wear over and over again. But it's really a way for us as a community to come together. It's quite fun. We host a lot of free events around mending and sewing and how to repair your clothes and how to dress for success, wearing the same pieces over and over again. So it's very much a community building time. I think summer is the time a lot of people want to buy a lot of that ultra fast fashion. We've also been locked away. So suddenly we think maybe we need all of those, you know, summer dresses or swimsuits. And so it's a way instead to wear our values. And the cool thing with our No New Clothes campaign is for every pledge taker, you can come to our site and take the pledge for No New Clothes. We calculate how much carbon we've saved as a community, how much water, how much money. And so it's a really fun way to stay accountable, but also to break up with a bad habit, which is fast fashion.
Yeah, totally. And how can people participate in that campaign, hashtag No New Clothes?
Yeah, so we welcome anyone and everyone, you know, on our website, remake.world, you can take the pledge and that way you'll get motivational emails and invites to our free community events. You can also follow along on our Instagram, Remake Our World. And, you know, we have actress Nat Kelly, who does a diary for us over the summer where she's sharing her journey of No New Clothes. So there's some wonderful influencers and folks that will also be sharing how they look their best while buying nothing.
Yeah, amazing. And I actually wanted to ask you, what do you think, you know, influencers and media can do to kind of start a change from their perspectives? Because, you know, there are a lot of influencers out there with tremendous following on Instagram that still do portray this type of lifestyle of buying new clothes or actually getting them for free, taking photos and, you know, doing it with another outfit over and over again. So what do you think, you know, these people can do, and what would be your message to them?
Yeah. You know, the influencer conversation is so important because in some ways, influencers democratize access to fashion for us, you know, and Instagram became the fashion magazine, and we were looking up to these people as a way for us to look that beautiful. But I think sadly, a lot of this today is pay to play. You know, even some of the lifestyle influencers and bloggers who are just telling us how wonderful they look, it's all product that's being given to them for free, and it's how they make money. And, you know, brands are essentially using them to get us to buy more and more and more. I will say, in the pandemic and even before, there are some wonderful models, actresses, influencers with outsized platforms that have supported our work. And, you know, Arizona Muse, Amber Valletta, you know, Maggie Q, Nat Kelly. And so within our community, we're starting to see people who realize that for our planet, for our children's future, for the makers of our clothes, they have an ability to use their platform for good. And so if you are an influencer that's in a position to do what's right, you know, join us. Know that within Remake, we take no money from the fashion industry. So the rockstar brands in our directory versus the serial offenders are truly based on due diligence and research. Support us, support our campaigns to pay her and no new clothes. But I'd say also for the everyday people listening, like, just be discerning about who you follow and who you admire, you know, because if they're just pushing product in order to pay their bills and make you believe in this false world, because so much of, you know, the gram is not real, the TikToks are not real. So at the end of the day, I think it's going to be we, the people that authentically follow people that we actually admire, that are going to be able to break this habit. You know, I think expecting influencers that are, that's their livelihood, right, is to push product to us to somehow change is in some ways a fool's errand. So we are much more focused on the authentic people that are willing to use their platform for good, because frankly, they have the financial ability or their revenue streams to do that. And I think our community is more discerning. You know, they're more interested in authentic content like ours than the millions and millions of bots and followers that are just there to push product to you. It's not even that terribly interesting, you know?
No, it's not. And it still shocks me. I actually want to give you an example. There was a really big platform that started Instagram Live about their sustainable fashion section that they're really pushing hard. And they invited, it was in Germany, and they invited one of the top influencers in, I think, entire world now. And I remember she actually came on that live wearing Topshop sweatshirt, and she was like, "Yeah, guys, you have to go and buy it now. It's very cute." And she stood up and she, like, you know, just gave everybody like a presentation of that piece. And I was like, "No, this just didn't happen. Let me just erase that from my memory," because it was just terrible. Also for the, you know, the branding of that platform, basically. So my question is to you, how brands can become more responsible and actually, you know, be more discerning about who to hire, who to work with?
You know, it's an excellent question, because there's so much of your example around, well, first of all, what does sustainability even mean, right? So for those of us who've been doing this work for a long time, we've spent, you know, some 15, 20 years fighting to make this a conversation. You know, back when we started, this wasn't a conversation. You know, the podcasts and fashion magazines and Instagram, no one was talking about it. And now in some ways, a lot of these influencers have co-opted that conversation, as have brands. You know, suddenly everything is sustainable. When the truth is, if we're not, again, talking about wages or substantively mm-hmm. thinking about how clothes can be as close to compostable as possible and doing mm-hmm. less harm on the planet, we're going to make no progress, right? So I think for an everyday person, it's first to say, educate yourself. And coming to platforms mm-hmm. like ours means you get the real talk rather than mm-hmm. someone with an agenda to sell you something. And yeah. I think for fashion brands also to be careful about their affiliations, because, you know, just as quickly as influencers can get you to move your product, the backlash when, you know, community realizes that someone is inauthentic can be very swift as well.
Yeah.
You know, our viral mm-hmm. pay up campaign was a classic example of citizen power, of brands, you know, not paying for orders during the pandemic and then using influencers and flash sales to try yeah. and move product. Mm-hmm. And our community was not having it. It was like, no, unless you honor these contracts so that the women who make your clothes are paid, you cannot be selling us stuff. And, you know, God help any influencers that are pushing product during that time. So I think we shouldn't be looking at influencers and brands to save us. It's all of us as everyday citizens that are going to have to do the pushing back, to be mm-hmm. holding the industry to account. And frankly, to get politicians to do their job, you know, yeah. and to regulate, well, what does it mean to call something a sustainable product, you know, regulate the outsized environmental and human rights impact that this industry has. It's too much to expect brands or influencers or even us to fix this. These yeah. issues are so yeah. wicked and so pervasive. There's no way to get anywhere without regulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I also believe that the change starts with the government and the leaders and people that do have the power to actually, you know, create a better environment to all of us and, you know, do all these paperworks and you know, legislation, etc. So I think, yeah, it starts with them. But ultimately, it starts with the consumer becoming more aware and demanding that change, right? So, it's a cycle. Where do you think we are at the moment? What needs to be changed next?
I think we have a moment in time where we could really seize it to build back better. You know, mm-hmm. the pandemic, if anything, it's taught us is that we are coming up against our ecological boundaries. You know, we have been stilled as a human race and, you know, been taught that we're not in charge, Mother Nature is in charge. And so if we could really take this moment where we've had to be at home or realize who are the most essential workers, the people who get us our mm-hmm. masks and our food, and to really remake those connections, you know, and mm-hmm. to be thinking about what matters. So I think there really has been an awakening, at least with our community. And yeah. that makes me very hopeful. You know, mm-hmm. our ambassador applications more than doubled during the pandemic, and that makes me hopeful. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we're seeing some different pockets of regulatory reform and, you know, the power of labor organizers and garment makers really pushing back on this system. And frankly, starting to see some solidarity across different parts of the fashion system, because whether you're a retail worker, a warehouse worker, or a garment worker, mm-hmm. or an everyday customer, you realize that this system is not working for any of us. And so yeah. if we can keep that solidarity to push for systemic change, I really do think this is our moment.
Mm, interesting. You also mentioned self-education. What would be the top resources, except Remake, of course, that you would recommend to people to kind of look at and get that self-education?
Yeah. I mean, people are such different kinds of learners, right? So mm-hmm. I'd say if you are an auditory learner, you know, there are some wonderful podcasts in this space. Obviously, this podcast, listen to that. It's like a crash course in the issues. You know, one of my dear friends, Kestrel, runs the Conscious, I forget what, look it up. You may have to edit this. Literally. Yeah. But you know, so there's podcasts on this topic that you can listen to. One, our new policy director, Elizabeth Klein, has written a wonderful book, Overdressed, which I think really gets to, you know, the shockingly high cost of fast fashion. So if you're into summer reading, you know, that would be a wonderful book. I'd say within Remake, our documentaries are very short, 8-10 minutes, but I think really get to the heart of the matter. So watch Made in Cambodia, Made in Mexico, you know, any of those are wonderful. But yeah, I think there's a host of, you know, resources, whether podcasts, whether books, whether short form films. And then there are amazing people that you could follow that are really cutting through the noise and speaking truth to power. There's a few different influencers like Aditi Meyer that I really admire, who talk about these issues from an intersectional standpoint. So, you know, giving them a follow might be a way as well. But then of course, you know, a Remake, we really try to be this one-stop shop. So the easiest thing you can do is just, you know, hit follow at the Remake Our World Instagram, and we can connect you to so many of these resources.
Amazing. Go and definitely check out Remake's Instagram. It's remake.world, right? Yeah, cool. So Rana Plaza disaster. It's been 7-8 years, if I'm not mistaken, you know, when thousands of lives of people working in unsafe conditions were basically just, you know, complete disaster. So after that accident, I wonder, how did Remake take the action to raise awareness and also secure that this accident would never repeat again?
Yeah. There were so many people that worked so hard to assure that never again would there be Rana Plaza. And I think for people listening, it's important to know that with the 80th anniversary of Rana Plaza, that even though that was terrible and no one should have to die for fashion, and there were, you know, Loblaw Law was in there, Children's Place was in there, so many fast fashion brands, cheap product, where, you know, those women knew there was cracks in the building. They didn't want to go in that day and were forced to do so for what, you know, to get us a $9 pajamas on time.
Yeah.
That they shouldn't have died in vain. And there was also so many who were injured. But the thing is, out of Rana Plaza came a very important binding agreement called the Accord. It was a group of predominantly European brands who, for the first time, when it came to building safety, sat across the table in a binding arrangement with unions to make the building safer. And the reason this conversation is really important is 8 years post Rana Plaza, in 4 weeks now, end of May, the accord is set to expire. And even though the accord has done some really important work in making the physical structures of factories in Bangladesh safer, their work is not complete. And, you know, brands would very much want, now that the public narrative and attention has perhaps shifted, to go back to voluntary efforts where they have no skin in the game. But for those who want to remember Rana Plaza and to honor the memory of all those young women who really shouldn't have died, you know, so young, it's to say that we need to demand that the accord is renewed. And so to ask H&M and to ask Zara, to ask your favorite fashion brand, if you're producing in Bangladesh, are you going to join the accord again? Currently, no brand has, you know, publicly said that they would. And if the accord is to expire, we're going to go back to voluntary efforts. And we know that that just doesn't make progress.
Yeah. To kind of end on a positive note, I'd like to ask you, what is your dream?
My dream is that these conversations, as we're having, become more and more mainstream. That as more and more, particularly women, because we know women's wear is what fuels the fashion industry, are awakened as they enter their customer power, that they are buying less and better, supporting the rock star sustainable brands, truly wearing their values, and that we can finally get this mostly deregulated industry to be regulated so that we can enjoy fashion without having to worry about it.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing.
Yay!
Hi guys, this is Dami, your host. Thanks so much for staying and listening to this podcast. If you would like to support us and follow what we do at Mess Magazine, please do follow us on LinkedIn at Mess Mag or on our Instagram at Mess Magazine. Thank you.